it was very confusing. And that was one of the primary weapons. Like in Quebec, Canada, there was a curfew of 9 o'clock during the COVID situation. So what that really implies is that at 8:59, you're completely safe and the pathogen has a watch and it can tell the time. And then at 9:01, it will then attack. And subconsciously, it lays in this layer of confusion that the government you've been taught to trust is acting so illogically and irrationally and nothing's making sense. It is a tactic that was definitely used against the public during COVID.
This is the True Health Report, where critical appraisal fuels true freedom.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the True Health Report. I'm your host, Dr. Andrew Kaufman. Today, we're going to be talking about a very timely and vital subject for you to understand what's unfolding in the world. And what I'm talking about is mind control. This is a topic I have definitely covered in various contexts, such as talking about the psychiatric experiments as part of the MKUltra and related CIA programs that have occurred and most likely are still occurring. But today's guest, Jason Kristoff, is an expert, an analyst of mind control operations going on in the popular culture and media and other sources. And he recently released an excellent documentary that is really good for the whole family to watch called Planet Mind Control. And I urge you to check that out. And we are going to talk today about the techniques, the infrastructure of mind control, and place it in context of our contemporary world and the 24-hour news cycle. So welcome to the stage, Jason Kristoff.
Doctor, thank you for having me. It's good to see you again. And it was a pleasure seeing you in person down in Mexico.
Absolutely. I've been definitely viewing your material over the years, but it's always great to meet in person and, feel the energy. And I knew instantly that I wanted to get to know you better and have you on the show. So thank you for taking the time out today.
Yeah, always a pleasure. Happy to help educate and try to help give some solutions to what's happening out there today.
So, Jason, I thought it might be good to start with just, how did you really become interested in this particular subject and devote your research efforts to looking further into mind control?
Well, something inside of me, I really like helping people. And I did own a small chain of health facilities in Canada. And I took some courses from Paul Check. I think you might know Paul Check, doctor.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's been a guest on the True Health Report recently, actually.
Yeah. So I took, the two levels of nutrition and the first level of exercise science. And I was prescribing exercise and diet regimes inside my health facilities. And I found people were very adverse to achieving their goals. They were having a very hard time. And I was embarrassed. I really was sort of spiritually taken back. I was embarrassed. I had some shame because I would take their money and I would do my part, but they wouldn't achieve their goals. They seemed actually very afraid to achieve those goals. So I phoned the Institute back. I didn't talk to Paul. I talked to one of his assistants and I said, I don't really know who to talk to, but my clients appear really good in the first couple of weeks. And then they fall off and they don't want to quit their addictions. And then they're sort of fighting with me. There's a battle to get them where they paid me to go, get them to go. And I said, well, is anybody else seeing anything like this as a pattern? And I think her name was Vidya. And she simply said, yeah, they're under mind control. And I said, well, why wouldn't anybody want to become thinner or lose the weight that it was their goal? I mean, why wouldn't they want to follow through with their own goal? And Vidya said, well, the way mind control works is like a herd mentality. It's like group dynamics. So if they're living the 23 hours of their life that they're not in the gym that day, and they're sort of in an overweight tribe, there's a big magnetic pull or affinity to blend with that overweight tribe, and that's going to override the 1 hour weight that you put it to the opposite side, or, you know, to their goal that they stated. And I said, oh, you know, it kind of makes sense. And Vidya continued and said, even if the person is from a poverty-stricken tribe, if you were trying to give them wealth advice or give them some sort of business advice, they would have greater loyalty to the poverty mindset because you always feel safer with the majority. And I said, well, this is a huge problem with me trying to establish myself as a trainer and develop a good reputation. Do you have any material on how I can move against this mind control? They called it mimetic programming at the time. So Vidya sent me some books and some documentaries, and I started researching, and I started to use subtle mind control techniques, sort of how I use my language when I was training them, and tried to, I can describe how this works, but I tried to hack their subconscious to lay in a good amount of repetition in the direction of their goal to override their old programming. And it was having really good success. I started to do it online. I stopped sort of working at my own fitness facility. I started doing it as a full-time job online, moved away from my fitness facility, eventually sold that. And then I had to start my own sort of institute where I do teach medical doctors and chiropractors, high-end health professionals and high-end coaches and regular people how this game sort of works, where you can trick the subconscious into really pursuing any goal that you want. And then once you get that under your belt, it's easy to look out into the world and see there is some force out there that's using this technology to program us in a disastrous way. And it doesn't have to be disastrous. You can use the same knowledge to program yourself or anybody else into a better life altogether.
Well, that's very fascinating, Jason. So I think what you're kind of saying is that we can flip the script, so to speak, and, you know, use this technology, and I think technology is an appropriate word to describe it, for good, because I think we can all see that it's not a device or a technology or a machine that is good or evil, right? It's how we interact with it and how we use it that determines the ethics of it. Now, before we even talk about like the ethics of it or get into the ideas, I think what you are describing, and by the way, I've also observed a similar phenomenon in patients, or, you know, clients rather, that have come to me with serious health problems, that, you know, I provide education about different things that can help their body go into a healing phase. And it's very similar to a lot of the work that Paul does, and I'm sure that you did. And even when people are facing their own mortality, they have trouble just sticking to a simple diet, right? And these diets for healing, they're not calorie restriction. They're not, you know, soup. It's not like just eating crackers and nothing else, right? There is variety and there is good nutritional sustenance. But even in that, you know, something is taking them away, even though they, you know, overtly want to survive, of course. So it could be a very powerful influence. And the observation that I wanted to ask you about from what you said is that essentially it's taking a part of our psychological makeup, right? Something that is intrinsic to humanity about how we think and behave and express emotions. And they're exploiting it for perhaps nefarious purposes.
Yeah, that's exactly it. We are pack animals. Unfortunately, yeah, some people might get a little offended, but we are pack animals, loving pack animals, by the way. And we find security in the bigger group. And what the, we do have a part of our mind that the subconscious that counts for repetitive content in our environment as a defensive stance or process it takes for keeping us alive. And the reason the subconscious counts for repetitive content is basically it's going to go into the environment, count the repetitive content, because the most repetitive content reflects what the bigger herd is saying, thinking, or doing. And this is all automatic. So the average person doesn't know this is happening. So there's many functions of the body. I mean, you more well aware than anybody else. I mean, your food digesting, your hair growing, your eyes blinking. These are things that go on automatically. We're not in control of them. And they're there as sort of a repetitive process to keep us alive. Like we have very loving functions in our body that are there to make sure we stay as healthy as possible and live as long as possible. So there's this other invisible security system is counting for the repetitive content. And basically, not only like we're not aware that this counting is going on, but once the subconscious has established what the most repetitive content is, and it does that because that reflects what the bigger herd is doing, it also invisibly forces us to adopt those ideas or beliefs, if it can pull that off, in an attempt to make us safe and bond with the bigger group. So, I mean, if everybody is going to the New York Yankees game and everybody's wearing New York Yankees colors, your subconscious will analyze the situation and give you psychological nudges in the form of emotion that you might want to wear the most popular color or the most popular style of jersey when you the next time you go to the baseball game. Right. So, yeah, go ahead.
Well, I mean, sports just provide so many obvious examples of this phenomenon, right? I was just recalling an episode of Seinfeld where I think it was the movie When Harry Met Sally, and they're two guys having a conversation at a baseball game, and the wave starts going around the stadium. And they keep going with their conversation, but instead of just ignoring the wave, they, like automatons, right, get up and participate in it.
So I say to her, "Don't you love me anymore?" You know what she says? "I don't know if I've ever loved you."
Ooh, that's awesome. Don't bounce back from that right away.
Thanks, yes.
Because defecting from the tribe, right, and they're illustrating this in the film, would be something you wouldn't want to do, right? So I can recall one experiment that illustrates this done by a psychologist where they were able to get somebody to essentially give the wrong answer that was obvious. Do you want to describe that a little bit?
Yeah, that was the experiment that was the group conformity experiment with Solomon Asch. So there were five people in the experiment and Solomon Asch was running it. But out of the five panelists, one didn't know what was going on and the other four were part of the experiment. So basically, Solomon Asch had three line lengths, like line A, line B, line C, and they were all different lengths. And then there was this farther line over to, say, the right. And the only job of the people in the experiment was to match the line length. And, you know, the line that was farther over to the right, obviously, let's say it matched the line that was labeled B. So that was the right answer. B was the right answer. But the four people on the panel that were in on the experiment, they gave the wrong answer. They gave line C. And by the time it came down to the only person that wasn't in on the con job, he was feeling so much pressure to give the wrong answer initially on the first round. And of course, the more rounds that went on, the more that individual became part of the group. He kept giving. By the second round, he was already giving the wrong answer just to fit in to the majority so he could feel safe. Now, that's the way we're hardwired. I mean, if we go to a Christmas party and you enter the room and everybody has alcoholic drinks in their hand, please be aware your subconscious counts all of the drinks and all the other familiar patterns well before you're a foot inside the room. So when the waiter comes up to you and offers you something to drink, you're most likely going to conform and try to, bend to the consensus and be one with the group. It's just the way we're hardwired. So that Ash conformity experiment proved that group pressure can make people ignore reality. That was their very firm conclusion, is that if you can control the group and you can fabricate if you can invent what that group believes and give that impression to someone who has no idea that they're getting ambushed, you can have a huge influence on that innocent victim and make them sort of walk lockstep in what, say, a mind controller wants from that uninformed victim.
Right. And is this, the example of 2 + 2 = 5 in Orwell's 1984 demonstrates this principle essentially?
Yeah. And it's kind of worse than that. It's almost like a ShamWow commercial with that guy called Vince, but wait, there's more.
It's worthless. Forget about it.
So 2 + 2 = 5. If you can manufacture the majority to belt that out, you can get people complying with it out of the group pressure mechanism, but it also causes a lot of confusion in the mind. And a confused individual, if you were to look into the work of Dr. Joost Merleau, Rape of the Mind, he talks a lot about the confusion factor. So they used to work on exploring how to best manipulate prisoners of war, or how the Koreans did it, the Koreans did it in the POW camps. And confusing the prisoners was the best way to break them down and sort of infiltrate what's called the mental resiliency, which made them highly suggestible and more apt to give up the secrets that the Koreans were looking for from the prisoners of war. And we see this confusion effect and it's in such great quantity today. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. But one big confusing, and I'll just say one that could really stick out for people, and there's a reason people won't want to go there, and that's another talk altogether. But in Butler, is that in Pennsylvania, if I recall? Is that where it is, Butler?
Butler University.
Butler, where there was an attempt on the former president's life.
Well, there was one that was in Pennsylvania for sure.
Yeah, it was in Butler. And, I have high caliber weapons myself, even as a Canadian. And there was supposed to be a high caliber round, either a 223 or something higher, that had made impact with DJT's ear.
Right.
And so that comes off as, okay, that happened. But the confusing part of it, which can add to impregnating the audience with a greater ability to mind control them down the line, because it changes brain function. Confusion changes brain function to make the mind control victim more highly suggestible. But 12 days after that shot to the ear, and since you're a doctor, I'm sure you can confirm that ear cartilage is that the only tissue on the human body that cannot regrow itself, I believe?
Well, it certainly, the mainstream says cartilage cannot regrow itself. I beg to differ, but I'm not sure about the ear cartilage, and certainly not without the right approach. But another problem with the ear is that there's very little blood there. So to get nutrients there and take away waste products is a very slow process.
It's a slow healing. So 12 days later, after that incident at Butler, the ear was fully healed and with, you know, no stitching. Even if it was plastic surgery, I would assume there'd be some stitching. So this is, it's confusing, and confusion today for me might even be the primary weapon in play where, I mean, obviously it's confusing to say someone is for peace and then that they're the opposite of that. And that can send some changes into the neurological equipment to the point where people become highly suggestible because they don't know up from down anymore.
There are a lot of examples from COVID. One you just reminded of was the paradox of my body, my choice when it comes to abortions, but you take the shot, roll up your sleeve when it comes to COVID jabs. And also the rapidly changing lockdown policies, like, for example, the restaurant policy where you have to, you know, they said wear a mask when you enter the restaurant until you're seated, but then you can take it off because, right, that is obviously confusing because if there really were a risk of, you know, invisible germs, the risk would be there the whole time, not just part of the time, right? So, and I think there was a group of psychologists that were consulted by the UK government, for example, and also we have similar things that we know about in Canada. I assume this happened in every nation, where they were advising the government about which types of mind control techniques would be effective in getting the population to comply with whatever measures they put forth.
Yeah, that was the BIT team, B-I-T. It was the Behavioral Insights team. And I believe it was, the SAGE team, the safety and... There was a committee for emergencies. I don't know the exact acronym, but it was SAGE. And it was the sort of unit or group that was advising the UK government on what steps to take next in the COVID pandemic. But 95% of the SAGE doctors were behavioral psychologists. So, of course, there was lots in play. And I tell people, you know, was it a case of clinical virology, or was it a case of behavioral psychology? I think it was more behavioral psychology, and it was very confusing. And that was one of the primary weapons. Like in Quebec, Canada, there was a curfew of 9 o'clock during the COVID situation. So what that really implies is that, you know, at 8:59, you're completely safe and the pathogen has a watch and it can tell the time. And then at 9:01, it will then attack. And at least, although consciously people would ignore it and just tell themselves, like, I have to be at home or I could get harassed by the authorities. Subconsciously, it lays in this layer of confusion that the government you've been taught to trust is acting so illogically and irrationally, and nothing's making sense. So again, if you read that book, Rape of the Mind by Yusper and Liu, it is a tactic that was definitely used against the public during COVID. You had the bottle shops and the weed shops in Canada were wide open, and the gyms and the chiropractors and the massage therapists, they were all closed. The fast food restaurants were open. So yeah, definitely a lot of applications are safe and effective, but they're so safe and effective that blanket immunity, legal immunity is given to any manufacturer of said products. So you can see lots of confusing messages, maybe the primary weapon that could have been used. And the group behavior was definitely used at the beginning, where they would, I believe they would fabricate the percentages of who complied and who didn't, because it was Edward Bernays that in his book, Crystallizing Public Opinion, he stated the majority is what drives the behavior of the public, but you don't even have to have the majority really exist. You could fake it. You could have someone on the news say that 53% of the population have already complied with said experiment, and that will trigger anybody listening to believe they're in the minority, and then it triggers this natural defense mechanism inside ourselves to, you know, hop to it and get with the majority to find safety.
Yeah, there were so many of those anomalies. I think, you know, you could have a field day in a meme factory with all those points of confusion from COVID. So far we've talked about, you know, the herd mentality and how that can even make people deny the obvious truth. We talked about repetition as a tool to reinforce the conformity. And we talked about how confusion can lead to suggestibility. And that, of course, makes sense, because if you're just confused about everything, it's not confusing to just do what you're told. It provides the clarity, even though it's not based on logic, right? The only logic is follow the lead. What other kind of techniques are used predominantly to influence the behavior of the masses?
Well, the fear is the big one. And, you know, it really has a big impact on brain function. So inside our neurology, our brain complex, we have the prefrontal cortex or the frontal lobe. And it's extremely human. It carries all those great human characteristics that we attribute to.
Right. And that's the part of the brain that was sliced into for frontal lobotomies to pacify the mentally ill, right?
So yes, absolutely. Always a target, sometimes directly, like the frontal lobotomies. And that really, I mean, can you, if we can even talk about that just for 2 seconds, wow. I mean, again, they're really targeting that area of the brain. It is the CEO of the neurological complex. So when this is on, it's supposed to check any idea that your brain formulates. It's supposed to sort of review it before you make it live. So will the CEO of the mind, the prefrontal cortex, or the frontal lobe, would it not catch all the red flags potentially in the early COVID operation? It probably would have. It's a very logical and rational part of the mind. It's very compassionate. It's the seat of spirituality, and it's also the seat of the will. So when we want to will something into physical reality, this part of the mind is heavily involved, and it's a high IQ part of the brain. And what it's really good at, the frontal cortex, is judging long-term consequences of your actions. So it has the ability to look far into the future and determine where's this going to take me in 5 years? Where's it going to take me in 10 years? Where's it going to take me in 15 years? So obviously, if you are a nefarious ruler, you don't really want this part of the mind on, because it can see through a lot of the liaria just through its natural design. So when you implement fear into the human neurology, what happens is you have this triggering of the primal part of the brain, which is called the limbic system. It's that fight, flight, freeze, or fawn system. And it doesn't have the ability to think long term. Like, it doesn't have it. And some people might say, well, that seems very odd that we have a part of our own neurology that doesn't have the ability to think long term. But this is the part of the brain that turns on automatically. It's very primal. It's very protective. And if someone enters
immediate danger, right, you don't want to necessarily consider long-term consequences, because there won't be a long-term unless you address the immediacy of the danger, right? And that's what fear can induce.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's another beautiful design of the system. So that's what I call the white magic system. And you can flip it over to black magic pretty quickly if you understand the design and, you know, take advantage of driving people into a fear-based reaction, shutting down their long-term thinking capability. Because when fear is experienced by a human, there's actually shown to be less electrical conductivity in the prefrontal cortex, less blood flow, and they're kind of, you know, combined. And then there's a huge shunting of, or like redirecting of neurological activity to the, you know, the primal system. Some people call it the R complex. It stands for reptilian complex, or they call it the hind brain, very low IQ. And when you're back in that part of the brain, because you're in fear, you're very reactive. So you're not, you know, you're not proactive, you're reactive, and you lose your ability to judge long-term consequences. So of course, if I'm in the business of being the ruler, I will also realize that I have to keep my mind control victim in that part of the brain sort of a lot, like forever, or they can reawaken. And that's never good for the abuser or the one bringing the fear, because there's something called battered woman syndrome, where it's a legal defense, where, to be honest with you, how it's triggered is the abuser didn't abuse their victim on a consistent basis. They were able to catapult themselves in electrical conductivity out of the hind brain into the prefrontal cortex, where a logical decision was made to actually murder their abuser. And I'm sure people know about this legal defense. If a woman murders her abuser and she can prove that the abuse was, you know, could have been fatal, eventually she can relieve herself of legal liability. And I tell people, this is sort of all the knowledge. There's a lot more knowledge than this that our social engineers understand, but this is why they're always keeping us in fear. They never let us retreat back to the prefrontal cortex. If it's not COVID, it's an economic downturn, it's a war, it's an energy shortage, it's meningitis, it's measles, and it's bang, 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 a nonstop buffet of fear to keep most of the population in that low IQ, short-term consequence brain, so you can keep directing them. They become highly suggestible, which is a very good for one of your mind control victims to be highly suggestible. As a mind controller, you pretty well have a 70% chance you're going to have your way with them.
Plus, also, I think this is used a lot in a sort of Hegelian dialectic where they generate fear, and then the proposed policy is would have the effect of alleviating the fear.
Yeah, and no one wants to be, I mean, that part of the brain has its own function when it's in fear, but one of those functions is, how do we get out of this? I don't like being here. This is very uncomfortable. So yeah, the ruling group will start the issue, start the fear, and then they'll always propose their own solution, which usually brings them into the iron grip of the tyrant. That's what this problem reaction solution does. And they keep doing it because it's just the way we're designed. So unless we know how these tricks work, they'll always cast the spell that they're designed to cast, and they're not letting up. They're always continuing with an acceleration of the fear-based narratives all the time. And what's even more interesting is that if you poison someone and basically scan their brain, you get the same reaction. It seems like the body's fight or flight reaction can be physical or in response to poison, because it seems that the reaction is just a fear-based reaction if your life is going to be lessened, like if your lifespan is in jeopardy. So when you eat an Oreo cookie, even though you might be relaxed, you can have the same effect where your body's just afraid of the Oreo cookie, on a chemical basis as, say, a pit bull chasing you down the road, which is, again, like a sham wow, but wait, there's more. And this is the reason they poison everything to keep us in that fear-based position.
Well, that's very fascinating. So now they don't have weapons that fire Oreos, right? But so, you know, expand on that a little bit more about how they use, let's say, you know, poisonous chemicals in food to contribute to this mission.
Well, first they got to get you to consume them, which is sort of against your genetic self-preservation mechanism. So that's the first hurdle. And if you watch the documentary about the repetition, you can see that that hurdle is easily skipped over. So what they would need to do to get you to consume poison is simply to make sure you're watching a screen or a magazine or a newspaper or listening to a radio show, and they control the repetitive content with, let's say it's alcohol. So they're going to riddle the environment that you're watching with what's called alcohol imprints. They're very, very common. I show quite a few of them in my documentary. This triggers your subconscious mind to associate that repetitive content with what the bigger herd is doing. And then your subconscious does what it's designed to do, which makes you a drinker. So now you're poisoning yourself. And it can be so prolific and so like full force that anybody listening to this is who drinks is already offended. Because I'm not telling them not to drink. I'm jeopardizing their safety. I'm asking them potentially to think about leaving the one of the biggest groups where they find safety inside of. So I'm challenging their security protocol. And that's going to always end with a massive physical and mental backlash towards someone who's delivering this message. So the reason people are so obsessed with alcohol is because it's everywhere. It's on the airplane. It's in the minibar. It's at every restaurant. It's at every sporting event. And the more repetitive exposure you have to that, those alcohol imprints, the more you associate safety with engaging in that behavior. So all the poisons that we consume en masse are sold in this way. So the Teflon pans, the alcohol, the vape sticks. I know there's good tobaccos that you can smoke that might have, I mean, I'm sure you can talk about that, or you already have good health properties. But the mainstream tobacco companies are what are repetitively drowning it.
Right. Well, I think one of the tricks they do would be to take something that could be, you know, powerful. Like if we look at tobacco, how it was used by indigenous people, you know, before Philip Morris took over, it's ceremonial. And even now with shamanic ceremonies, right, because the spirit of tobacco, like if you observe tobacco growing, it's a dominant plant. Other mm-hmm. plants, form around it, rather than push it out of the way. And it's used as a protective, plant in medicine ceremonies where they might use ayahuasca or something like that to keep away negative spirits, right? And also the smoke going up to the heavens, right, is a spiritual aspect. And so it's been used in those ways, but in the modern parlance with the mind control, the advertising, right? Because they originally called it public relations, marketing, advertising, consumerism. All of those are really psychological tools. It now is something that is, you know, that you're addicted to, that you're hooked on, that you do habitually without purpose or thinking. The plant itself has been contaminated with all kinds of chemicals, accelerants, things to make it more addictive and such. So it's completely been subverted, and the original use and power of it is, you know, virtually unknown and not benefiting anyone these days except for a small number of people.
Yeah, absolutely. And whatever someone might be addicted to, and, you know, could just be McDonald's or fast food restaurants, the repetitive content has a lot to do with hijacking our group dynamic neurology. So we just feel safer doing what the brain thinks is the most popular thing to do. So now, once the ruling group has got the average person consuming one of their poisons, so the average group understands no one's going to consume all of them. If you consume some of them, that's fine, because you get to this situation, and I explained this with some trail camera footage I saw one time I thought was very interesting. So there was this lone wolf, very strong, and on the trail cameras, and they had a lot of the area of this wolf pack hammered. They would be video recorded and studied. So it was obvious this big black wolf was the head alpha, and such a strong specimen would sleep. Sort of this male, this alpha male, knew his job was to protect everybody else, would sleep up on the hill by himself and overlook the wolf pack while they were sleeping. And then there was trouble. That wolf would be down and calling on the other male wolves of how to strategize and deal with the threat. But one day on the trail camera, the wolf comes back and it's obvious that it's injured. So now you see the behavior change. So the wolf, the big black wolf's got a limp and it doesn't want to sleep by itself that night. So you see the wolf with his tail down. He's not so aggressive anymore. He is injured and he nuzzles his way into the group to sort of say, I'm less now. I'm injured. I'm going to need the group to survive, which basically, I mean, at a eureka moment in watching this, I'm like, weak animals need the group more than strong animals.
Yes.
Period. So our, you know, this group of social engineers also knows of this play, this sort of change in behavior if we're injured. So it's sort of like the neurology of any animal can take stock of if we're strong or not at any time. So a lot of humans will say they're strong when they're poisoned. But it's almost like the neurology is very honest and might say, like sort of an internal dialogue, okay, Jason, you're not as strong as you really think you are. You drink a lot of alcohol, you smoke Marlboros, you're 40 pounds overweight. And although you talk tough and you got a, you know, you got a gun vault of AR-15s and 50 caliber handguns, you're really not strong enough to go against the majority. So if the neurology makes that call that you're too injured and too weak to be the lone wolf, it has a secondary compensation mechanism, which is do as you're told, follow the group. So they've been poisoning us for 5 or 7 decades before they attacked in 2020. And the primary modality of that attack was the repetitive content to make us have passionate love affairs with everything that was toxic so that right. We became like the injured wolf. And this is explained as well by psychology professor Dave Hodges. He was on an interview with Sarah Westall. He's sort of a regular contributor there. And he calls it the mental resiliency. When we're poisoned, we lose our mental resiliency to say no, like to follow morality and ethics, where we put ourselves in this category of we're too weak to push back. So let's just do what we're told is the second defense mechanism. And that's what mass poisoning triggers in a lot of humans, not all of them, because I know some massively poisoned humans that say no and probably would say no to the death. But this group also knows it's a percentage game. It's not 100% here or there. You just want to increase the compliance quotient, they call it, from the average 30%, maybe up to the 60 or 70%, which is probably what they got from 2020 to 2025.
You know, even Paul Check was talking about some weightlifters who are unhealthy. right? And they physically appear to be strong and healthy, but even many of them are weakened by this chronic poisoning. And it's certainly an area that I spend a lot of time researching and teaching about. So we can see this multi-prong attack where you have the psychological aspect that seems to be played out a lot through the media. And then we have the physical attack played out through, you know, pollution, food, personal products, even pharmaceuticals, of course. And it seems, you know, very organized and methodical how it's played out over time. And I really appreciate you laying out this evolution. What do you think looking at, because, you know, I recently heard Catherine Austin Fitz say, for example, that, you know, COVID round two has started. We feel the encroachment of the digital surveillance state. We hear in the news there are issues with energy shortages that are going to lead to, you know, food shortages, right? And my intuition tells me that there is a big operation upon us right now. What are the signals that you see of these various agendas in terms of mind control?
Well, you see the repetitive nature of it, and you see the repetitive nature of it rolling out in a similar way that it did in 2020, where let's say there is what I call the Operation Nice Guy. So we have it, what's going on right now is Operation Nice Guy. We have the Latvian government. We have the Swedish government. We have the Italian government. We have the Australian government, California state government, and some other governments coming on slowly because they don't want to all do it at once, or they'll show their cards that they're all in on it together. So this Operation Nice Guy has a mind control aroma to it because they're coming out and saying, we're with you, the public. We got your back. You know, this is the same group that did everything from 2020 to current. And they're saying, we have your back. We're going to reduce our fuel taxes to help you, the customer. And so psychologically, that draws the mouse a little closer to the mouse trap, psychologically nudging the public to believe that the government once again is taking the position as protector of the public. So this gives an energetic football over to the government, which they love holding and saying, we're going to take it from here. This will be step one. So you're going to see them all come out. The first psychological strike is Operation Nice Guy. Try to befriend the public. We all know that no one trusts these people. So try to go and befriend the public and get an invisible energy exchange underway where the public outsources the solving of the problem to the government on that first Operation Nice Guy step. And once the public does that, then step two and step three and step four are going to occur because you've already outsourced your responsibility to them, believing that they have your back once again. And then you're going to get into a situation of, this is going to hurt me a lot more than it hurts you, but really it's meant to hurt you. And you can see repetition in the phraseology that they're using. They're talking about sheltering in place, work from home. You have the same phraseology to trigger that familiar script that the psyche has a couple repetitions under the belt already. And that triggers a familiar and safe feeling in their neurology that you have a script for this already. So I can see what everybody's saying is that, yeah, they are going to try into a secondary push to accomplish some of their 2030 goals. where even the potential of rebelling, if someone says, well, I'm not going to stay home, I'm going to drive around, but how about if there's no gas, right? And there are solutions for this. I don't want people to feel doom and gloom. There are solutions.
Well, I think that is critical. And of course, that is a big part of what this platform is about. We don't want to just create paranoia, right? Because we, as we talked about, fear is the opposite of what we want, because we want to help protect you from this. And I agree that none of this is a foregone conclusion. If we take the right action, it will not be successful. So what are some things that, you know, you hinted before about using the same mind control techniques, but in a way to encourage, motivate, and achieve good things. So is that what you're proposing here that people can do? Or is it enough to just recognize these programs coming at us and realize that they are not true?
That's the first thing. The first thing is to watch. I mean, I always say there's three documentaries to watch. One is Planet Mind Control, so you can understand how they're going to trick you to go along with it, or they've already tricked you to go along with some of their older agendas. The second documentary I think is good for people to watch is the Jones Plantation, entertainment-based Hollywood film with some ups and downs and some twists and turns that'll make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. If you go to the jonesplantation.com website, you can watch that. It will also give you perspective of how they've tricked you up until this point of how to participate in, you know, in the Jones Plantation. I mean, we live on the Jones Plantation and people should find out what that means. Barnum World is another documentary people could watch, and it gives great insight, and that's free on YouTube, Barnum World. So starting now, off,
shout out to Drew Treglia for, you know, producing and directing both those latter films that you mentioned.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Yeah, it's great work. And it's just about education at the beginning. And I tell people, even if you want to watch the film drinking a beer, smoking a cigarette, it doesn't matter at this point in time, because it doesn't matter. You just got to know how they trick you to get there, because you have to rise up this tension energy so people can react and push back on the system. So then you'll find out the repetition could make you believe anything. And you can use positive repetition to make that part of the mind believe anything else as well. So you can start arranging your environment, how you speak, what you read, what you watch, have positive influences, and then you don't feel so disempowered. And then you're not so, you can trick the subconscious to believe that anything is the majority, and the subconscious will drag you in that direction. So especially if you're looking for some more money and you want to prep properly for what the ruling group is planning for you and your family, you might need some extra money. Focusing on a lot of repetition about positive view of entrepreneurship. And then before you know it, within the year, you'll start a small business and start developing a bit more abundance so you can prep properly. But there's ways to take your power back as well. Like yesterday I was going, I'm shopping for a wood stove that has the baking units in it. So I can cook, I have a stove top on the wood stove. You don't plug it in. I can bake items, and then I can also warm items in the top units of this. So I'm taking my power back off the electrical grid to prepare my own food. So I just took my power back. And if you don't have your power, and if you go to grade 7 physics, and power is neither created nor destroyed, or energy can neither be created nor destroyed, if you didn't have that power to begin with, who had it? They did. The ruling group has your power. That's what makes them powerful. That's what makes them in charge. These are all electrical terms. So if you even have a pocket charger, and I can charge my phone, I took my power back to charge my own phone. Not to say the internet will always be there, but I can charge my phone. I could heat my house with a wood stove. I took my power back to heat my own house. I live right on the ocean, but you can't drink the water. But if I get a distilling machine, I can actually drink the water. I took the power back to distill. I can make my own drinking water. I'm growing myself and my beautiful fiance, which I believe you met at Anarchapoco. She's a farmer, and we have a very large garden and fruit farm. And so we're taking our power back by making sure we have our own food. So, and then someone might say, well, the power might go off. It's okay. I bought this 5,000 watt, or I think it's a 7,000 watt generator, which will power, you know, let the fridge run, let the freezer run, and it's solar powered. So if the power does go off, I take my power back to keep my necessary utilities on so I don't waste my investments in my food. I take my power back. I take my power back. I take my power back. So it's very, very, very important that people be positive with the repetitive influences in their life, but also participate in this process of gradually taking your power back, knowing that when it flows back to you, it's actually getting removed from them. And then if we all do that, they become no greater threat than a drunk down at the bar at 2 o'clock in the morning that you just push over into the bushes as you walk home. They have our power, and that's the problem.
Wow. So very powerful way of thinking about it. And what I think I hear is that, you know, we are dependent on these same powers that are trying to mind control us, make us weak, manipulate us, take away our freedom. But if we can essentially take care of our own needs, right, that is the way that we can maintain control over our lives and our own sovereignty.
Yeah, as much as we can. And yeah, it might be a little bit of hard times coming up, but hard times create strong men. So we need some more strong men around to do their part. But this is a great strategy to say, yeah, okay, well, I might feel a little disempowered now, but I can still go out and get a little $39 solar charger for my phone and feel the great power that I just retrieved into my own life and jammed into my own life, so that if the power does go out, I can go out on the front lawn and charge my phone. And if the towers are working, I can phone other people that might have taken the same path and prepared in the same way. So I really think we can energetically flip the script here, understanding this group we're dealing with, without a shadow of a doubt, are black magic energy magicians. And we really need to take our energy back, take our charge back, take our power back, because if it's not with us, it's with them. And they lord over us with that power. And it's time to leave them impotent and castrated, powerless as they've made us.
Absolutely. And, you know, of course, in my world, this also includes the power of being able to handle your own health situations, and including, you know, emergencies and accidents and such like that, because we may not also have access to, you know, the emergency department and other hospital services at some point. And I guarantee you're going to have way better health if you do this and stay outside of that system, as you alluded to before. So, Jason, you've given us really some amazing, empowering ideas. What kind of resources, because I know that you have courses and coaching options, like how would, you know, what can people take advantage of to help them meet these goals in terms of what you offer?
Well, they can just, I educate for free. I'm a humanitarian. I want, it's no fun. It's, you can't be healthy, wealthy, and wise when everybody else is struggling. So I want, you know, basically no one wins unless everyone wins. So I will educate for free. I educate for free every day on my social media. I educate for free on my private email system. So if people want to get on my private email, just email me at info at jchristoff.com. I will continually educate you for free about
and
these
issues. Let me just say that your emails provide good value. Like you're talking about the solar generator, and I know you just sent out recommendations for the top solar generators. You also introduced me to a researcher who has a lot of good material, David Hughes. So, you know, these aren't sales emails. They really do have value, and I would encourage people to sign up.
Yeah, and I develop a relationship for people. I love anybody that wants to help and get ahead and be a, you know, a strong human, moral, and ethical node in the world. Absolutely. And a couple times a year, I do run courses, and that's the time someone will see a minor ad in my email, but it's always at the bottom. I don't try and clutter it up too much. And I do have a business for beginners, sort of a business course for beginners, so people can open their first online business. And we actually got to do it live. It's more like a workshop where we're going, like with this course, you actually get your own website. We're going to show you how to register the URL. We're going to make your website live right on the camera. And we're going to have you custom design it because I already have that software. We're going to determine what your best product is to sell. And we're just going to show you how to get a little bit of extra income flowing your way in terms of just protecting yourself and your family, having a little bit extra money for organic, maybe the water distiller, maybe the solar power generator. Maybe you need to get a bit of seed, or maybe you need to rent some land to go start your garden on. These things all cost money. We're not doing this so that people can drive around in Hummers and Ferraris. We just want people to be a little bit more prepared, and their safety, the family safety, the safety of everybody out there. I don't care if they're gay or straight or black or white. Your safety, your family safety, the safety of your children. I do this a lot for the children as well. That's my top priority. So those are my offerings, and anybody's free to take me up on them.
Well, that sounds fantastic. And of course, we'll have a link to all those resources down below. Jason, it's really been a pleasure talking to you. And I really got a lot of validation for some things I already knew, and learned a lot of new important things. And one of the unique aspects you bring, I think, is putting this all together in the macro framework. So thanks so much for coming on and educating the audience today.
Thank you for having me on, Doctor. Always a pleasure.
Even if you're doing your best to live clean, you're still being exposed. From off-gassing furniture and plastics in your food to synthetic fibers, personal care products, and even medical imaging procedures, especially fat-soluble chemicals. These toxins don't respond to your average detox. They settle deep in your tissues, and you need the right tools to clear them out. That's why I created the Ultimate Detox Protocol, a free 30-day roadmap that teaches you a serious nature-based detox using pine, targeted nutrition, and a focused daily plan. You'll choose the cleansing diet that fits your needs, support your elimination pathways, and take action against the toxin load that's been holding you back. Many people who've done this protocol have reported major improvements in energy, focus, digestion, and even long-standing symptoms they thought they'd have to live with forever. Unfortunately, I can't share the full scope of results people have experienced using this protocol, not on this platform. If I did, the video would surely be taken down. But trust me, it is incredibly powerful. Download it for free at the link in the show notes. Your health is your responsibility, and this is the best place to start. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you in the next True Health Report.